Hi there. We'd like to welcome you to the virtual kitchen table. We are Erin from Everlearning, Haley from Taking a Kinder Path, and myself, Ashley from Ashley as Mama and Storytime Shelves. We're gathering to have conversations about family life and home education, most specifically unschooling, which is sometimes known as self-directed education, or as I often refer to it, consent-based learning. We'll be sharing experiences and ideas, learning as we go. We hope you'll pull a chair up to the table and join us.
Welcome back to the virtual kitchen table. It's Erin here, and I'm here with Ashley. Hi, Ashley.
Hello.
And Bex Tobin-Fine. Hello, Bex.
Hi.
So excited to have Bex today. Bex has a new picture book coming out in 5 days from the time that we're recording, at least. So by the time this episode is out, it will probably be available. So her new picture book is You Are Home, and I'm sure it will come up in conversation, and we will also link some information about that at the end so that people can find out where to get that. So the conversation, I think, was inspired by the idea that Bex has this new book coming out, and also was just gracious enough. She wrote a blog post for the Everlearning website, which was exciting because I've never had a guest blogger on before. So that was kind of a first for me. But it kind of initiated the whole idea. Like Bex, I think when you and I connected, I thought like this might be a really interesting topic. We've never really talked about home, have we, Ashley? Like, I mean, obviously we talk about homeschooling and home education and like family, and goodness knows we've talked a lot about community. That seems to keep coming up. But we haven't really just centered in on like home as a topic. So yeah, I thought that might be kind of interesting. I think we all felt that there were some ways that could be really relevant. And so, you know, I think we'll probably look at it from a few different angles today. Home, I mean, I think we often, our first thought is physical place, but as we'll probably, you know, get more into, Bex has some really interesting thoughts that play out in her book around children, and I guess all of us finding a sense of home just within ourselves as well. So yeah, I think this could go in a few directions. So yeah, I mean, I'm excited to talk about this and sort of interested to see where it goes. And I guess we could, I think we talked about maybe just starting about sharing a little bit about what comes to mind for each of us when we think about home. So for me, again, I think of that physical place, and I probably have, I don't know how common this is. So my parents still live in the home that, like, I lived in the same home my whole life, and my parents still live there. So, and I turned 50 in the fall. So I've had 50 years of having this sort of childhood home. And I don't think it's not maybe unheard of, but I don't know how many other people have that. And I do feel, feel very fortunate or blessed in a way to have that. And I think it's probably one of those things that, if you don't have that, it's fine. You find other ways of having that sense of home. But it is a piece for me that I just, you know, because I think it's a place where I can see so many different ages of myself in one. You know, it's not just the house. There's a kind of like a meadow and a field around it. Like, it's the house and the space around it. So that's kind of the first thing that comes to mind for me. But something that actually, when I was thinking about this conversation this morning, something else came up for me, which is that at the age that I'm at now, so, you know, I kind of just finished homeschooling and formed, but, you know, legally having responsibility as a parent, about a year and a half, 2 years ago. So it's like a new era for me as far as, of course I'm still a parent, but it's different to not kind of legally be responsible for kids anymore. And so it is sort of a new era for me. And so Bex, this theme about finding home within yourself is really relevant to me right now, because again, it's like your identity is, you know, I think our identities get tied up in certain things. And when we move into a new life stage, we're kind of trying to figure out where we fit with some of those things again. But I also think that it's given me a little bit more time and space to kind of like, this sounds kind of airy fairy, so I don't know where I'm going with this, but kind of get in touch with other parts of myself, other ages of myself, maybe, that, you know, during the busyness of parenting, I just wasn't that focused on. So it's kind of, I almost would say it's kind of brought me home to myself a little bit. And I think that's still a process for me. So over the past year, I have had a couple of physical, again, physical places, but not houses. One's a provincial park and another is just sort of like a trail area that I have really been feeling a sense of home in those places, and just that they kind of like reflect different parts of myself. So yeah, I don't know. That just kind of came up for me this morning, and I felt like it related a little bit to the thoughts that were coming to mind when I was reading Bex's book. So I don't know. Ashley, do you maybe want to go next?
I love this topic. And it is funny. I was thinking about that too, Erin, how we've, like you said, certainly talked about home in a sense throughout all of our episodes, probably, but it's almost, I mean, I don't know how many episodes we're at now. It's surprising that we haven't had this. So this is super exciting. But for me, when I was thinking about the topic and home and kind of, yeah, like what does home mean to me and what comes to mind? I too, like I thought about my physical home first, not just like current home, but my past, like the home I grew up in and whatnot too. A couple homes that I was in for shorter periods of time. And when I just thought about it and I thought about home, I had three words that kind of came to mind, like family. So family, safety, and familiarity. So family, I've just, you know, kind of the idea that my home is wherever my family is. And that can mean even different things, and thinking about like my immediate family, my extended family, but just in general, like home will be wherever my family is. But then when I think of home, I also think about, and not just for myself, but for my family, for my kids especially, like home is a place of safety. Or a place of where you can feel the safest. That's just a big thing for me when it comes to home, and that's super important. And then just, yeah, familiar. It could be like a familiar physical space, like a familiar, you know, just being in your home, you're very familiar with it the longer that you've been there. So probably interesting for you, Erin, right? To have a familiar space for so long. Whereas I think if you move into like a new home, a new physical home, you don't have that familiarity yet, and it feels different. And I remember that moving into our current house, being like, this doesn't feel like home yet, but it was okay because I wasn't, I mean, it would have, I was going to say it was okay because I wasn't alone. I was with my husband, but it could be okay if you're on your own too, moving into a new space, you can still find that sense of home. Yeah, and then with the familiarity piece, I think the other word that was kind of coming up for me was like comfort. So feeling comforted in your home, and just, and also, having your home be a comfortable space. And then that kind of did lead me into thinking a little bit more about like when you invite people, like I was thinking outside of our family too, like close friends and, or just friends or neighbors, like inviting people into your home, wherever that may be, but like whatever space you consider home, just inviting people in kind of came to mind as well. One last thing I'll mention is that because I was trying to think kind of away from like my house and forest school, which I talk about on here, or you know, I mention it here and there on the podcast. Forest school came to mind, and I think it's for, you know, a few different reasons, but one, we've been going to the same forest school spot with pretty much a similar group of people, and definitely the same space for, I don't know what it is, like a year and a half or something now. So not a super long time, but long enough that like when we show up there Tuesdays and we pull in, there's the familiarity, there's a sense of safety. So I think in a way, like that kind of feels like a home, you know, different from our house home, but where me and the kids show up on a regular basis, and there's very similar feelings around what it feels like to be home. So yeah, I think I'll leave it there.
Yeah, that I can relate to a lot of those last pieces you just mentioned, Ashley, but yeah, I won't go there at the moment. So Bex, I would love to hear from you.
I think you both said so many really important things that I feel like I absolutely relate to and really want to address. That's just, well, first of all, Erin, that's just incredible. That just, it warmed my heart to hear that you still have your family home from when you were born. I mean, that is so lovely, and I love hearing stories like that. I guess the opposite of my experience in a funny way. So I'll get back to that. But also, yeah, what you said, Ashley, about, safety and familiarity and family. Absolutely, family is like one of the first things that I would say when it comes to home. And that safety, I'd love to look more at that afterwards. So for me, I guess it's funny for me to think of home as a place being the first thing that comes to mind for so many people. And obviously, I think your experiences of thinking of the physical first before anything else are really more common, to be fair, and more the norm. I first started thinking about this and how maybe my point of view was a little bit different when I would be reading picture books about home and houses specifically to my daughter, and thinking, oh boy, this is not my perspective. This is not what I think about when I think about home, and looking for that. So I do think though that in contradistinction to Aaron's experience, that the reason why I feel the way I do probably does stem a lot from the fact that my home, my house, it was a house, burned down when I was a child. And to be fair, I wasn't the youngest child. I was actually 14, and some of us might say, oh, you're not even a child anymore at the age of 14. I mean, you're a teenager. It shouldn't matter. But I think that having that experience and having the home that I had considered, both as the physical and the metaphorical, all rolled into one, as my safe space. And then having that taken away, it felt like even though I had another place to live, and I was very fortunate that immediately friends took us in and I had a place to be safe, but that safety, that feeling of safety was taken away. And so for a long time, I think after that, I felt homeless. And so I guess that's where maybe the split of the physical and the metaphorical, the idea of home, came into play. So for me, home really very much to this day is more of a feeling than a place. And I think the biggest reason for that now is that it feels like it gives me kind of this more flexibility, this ability to say, well, even if the physical isn't matching my expectations at this moment, or whatever it is, that I still can feel that sense of comfort and actually safety is a really good word that I don't think I've used before, but in my notes previous to this, I did. And Ashley, that was great. That I can have that sense of comfort and safety wherever I go, or in different situations, or through different activities. So I feel like that's what we'll be talking about a lot.
Yeah. Oh, that is, I mean, I think what struck me there, Bex, when you talked about being 14, and that maybe people wouldn't think of that as being, you know, a child. But to me, I'm thinking losing your home, I mean, especially in such a quick, I'm going to say violent way like that, right? Fire. But I mean, losing your home in probably in any way, I think for any age is substantial, right? I think it's substantial. I think about this a little bit. So some of the people that I work with, well, I would say many of the people I work with, even ones that have relatively secure housing, it's still not as secure as the average person's, probably, you know? And I think about that a little bit, that we can grieve things even if a solution has been found. Like you were, you know, I mean, it's wonderful that you had a place to go after that, you know, after losing your home. But it's still an enormous loss, because home is more than just having a physical place to lie down. And I'm just thinking about somebody that I work with a couple of years ago, and just her life circumstances changed. And it's just the way that kind of her housing is structured. It just feels so like numbers based. So it's like, well, you no longer qualify for this kind of an apartment. So like, I can remember being at her place and opening the letter that it just very matter of factly, you know, you're now considered overhoused. So, you know, your housing will switch to this in 6 weeks. And she still had an apartment. It was still in the same building, just much smaller, but still in the same building. But it was just that idea of like, first of all, the practicality of getting it all moved and figured out in 6 weeks. But just that thought that, yeah, she's still going to have a roof over her head. It's even the same building and neighborhood. So it's not, you know, and it wasn't. It makes sense. Other people need housing too. So, you know, that made room for a couple of extra people, but it doesn't take away from the idea that it's still like a loss. And I think, it reminds me a little bit in a way of like just losing a pet, for example, where all the things you don't realize are part of your day. Like, you know, just the way you walk a certain way, or maybe don't hold the door open too long on your way in case they run out. Like when I've lost pets, I'm suddenly aware of how much of my day is tied up in the little habits. And I think about that too with our home. When we're talking about it physically for a minute, it's all the things, right? It's the way you turn your faucet. It's the, you know, the particular creak of a certain door, or something that, you know, you notice a particular bird outside at the same time every morning. And a lot of it's subconscious. But I think when you make that shift, even if it's a positive one, even if it's you're choosing it, your system has to adjust on, like, I think a lot of levels that we don't even think about. I don't know if anybody has anything else on related to that or not, but Ashley, you look like you might.
Well, Bex, I think it looked like maybe you had something to add, so I don't mind going after you.
Are you sure?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay. I had something for both things. So I'll start with the first one and then you can jump in and I'll come back.
Sure.
So, immediately what you said about your friend, Erin, made me think that one of the things that I really wanted to put into the book, You Are Home, I think it's so important, is the fact that so many people not only think of home as a physical place, okay, that's one thing, but they think of home as a house. And that is, oh my goodness, I have such a problem with that, because okay, so first of all, the idea of that privilege of those of us who have lived in houses, I mean, this is not what most people in the world are living in. I mean, we have to first think about apartments. And then, of course, there are so many other methods of living and places you can live. And I mean, yes, I get into that in the book, like living in an RV, but there are so many things, and a house isn't one of them. And I really want children to know that just depending on the size of the place that they live, it doesn't mean that they are, you know, more or less worthwhile as people. I mean, just because your friend was moved into a smaller place doesn't, like you said, the fact that it was put in terms of numbers, and home can't be put into numbers. But the fact that we do, we say bigger numbers, like a bigger square footage, or the fact that your home isn't connected to someone else's home means that this is a better home. Or that it's the definition of home, like the quintessential home is a house. And I really wish that we would step away from that as a society. But anyways, yes, please, Ashley.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think we might come back to that too, because that's just such an important piece. And I like that, you know, to have, it's, we know it's so important to have representation in children's books and in children's picture books, right? Because not like what everything you just said, not all children right now are living in, yeah, a house that might come to some of our minds. That's not what comes to their mind, because that's not their lived experience. So yeah, super important. I just had a little comment that I wasn't sure when I was, or if I was even going to mention it, but you had brought up, Bex, in your thoughts that you shared with us before we started recording today, you had mentioned like a child's bedroom, which struck something for me. And then Erin, when you were just talking about the loss that you can feel, or the grief that you can feel when you lose home in whatever way that looks like, and you pointed out how that's, you know, sometimes that's not by choice, and sometimes it is, and that I just wanted to quickly share that I hadn't thought about this in a while, but I specifically remember so I had moved out, I would have been out of the house for at least a year, like left my parents' home and moved away for school for a year. So it wasn't right away. It wasn't right after I left. And I was in my first, it was a basement apartment that I was in for, I think, my second year of university. That would have been so long ago. It's hard to remember. But I remember actually crying one day and having so many big emotions around the loss of my childhood bedroom that I had been in, I think, since I was about 2 years old, till I moved out for school when I was, what, 18, I think. And when I left, I think I was just probably super excited about leaving and maybe a bit upset to say goodbye to my bedroom. But I also at that time wouldn't have known that I wasn't going to be going back one day to that bedroom. You know, you leave for school and maybe some people know. I wasn't even thinking about it. And so anyway, yeah, it had been, you know, a year or so after I left. And I remember one day just bawling and thinking about that space that I spent so much, I mean, that I grew up in. And I wasn't even, it wasn't about the whole family house. It was specifically about my bedroom, because my bedroom, I loved my bedroom as a kid. I loved that I could make it my own. And I really spent a lot of time making it my own. I remember how I felt when I was in that bedroom. And I, for whatever reason, that day it hit me, I guess. And I was crying. I was so upset that, and I remember thinking, like, you know, kind of like, oh my gosh, I'm grieving the loss of my bedroom. And I think even at the time being like, that's kind of unexpected or funny, or, you know, I haven't lived in that room for over a year, but why am I so upset about it now? So anyway, I just wanted to share that, because it can't just be me. Someone else has probably had a similar experience.
But you know, just to go along with that idea of sometimes, because I chose to move out, right? So that it was a choice, but there was still some upset feelings about having, oh, I don't have that space anymore, and I won't ever be back in that space, and that's okay, but I'm sad about it. So I just wanted to share that.
Oh no, and I think that like actually when you're describing, making your room your own and probably setting things up a certain way, like physical places are not just physical places either. They reflect all these parts of ourselves. So I feel like, your creativity, and it was probably a place where you came to decompress after school or work or maybe a difficult situation or whatever. So again, it's like reflecting all these pieces of yourself. And it's not that we have to have physical places to do that, but that just tends to be what happens, isn't it? We connect certain parts of ourselves to certain places. And I think I am quite place oriented, like not even just around houses, but like if we go, like I've talked before about how there are a couple of campgrounds that we've camped a few times, but just choose different campsites or whatever. And there is always a sense, like when we go buy a campsite from 2 or 3 years ago, it's like, oh yeah, remember? Like it's attached to that era, and those memories. And I always just kind of find that interesting, especially at a campground, because it's, I don't know, it kind of brings out sort of a young side of me. I'll see other people setting up and I'm thinking, well, that's our campsite. Right? Because for that period of time, it's your space, right? And of course, logically, I realize that, this changes hands sometimes day to day. But it is funny how we attach certain parts of ourselves to places, and it kind of all plays out together. But Bex, I just too, I love because I think one of the things I was thinking about is like, how does our culture think about home? And so you kind of answered that very naturally, that there's so much tied up in status and success maybe. And I would also say, even aside from like whether it's a house or not, or how big the house is, or how new or fancy or whatever the house is, there's other pieces that I think come into play around probably judgments around neatness and tidiness. And like I think, and this maybe segues nicely into kind of the homeschooling end of things, as far as what does our kind of, what's that vibe our house has when we're homeschooling? Because when we're talking about neatness and tidiness and maybe sometimes cleanliness, when you have, and pets, when you have people using a common space, rather than vacating it for the day and coming back, it can take on a different, it can be harder, right, to keep things. And I think especially when if we are really kind of respecting our child's creativity. I mean, we've talked about this in past episodes, actually, where, kids might have something set up and then there seems to be something unrelated to us that's set up, but they want the first thing to stay because it's still important to them. I think when families homeschool, it's probably helpful. I don't know if everybody does this, but I think most people find over time you start thinking of your home differently. It's not just the place that you come back to unwind and sleep. It's you're playing there, you're working there, you're interacting there in a really different way.
I have so many things to say to so many things you both have said. It's amazing. I had no idea there would be so much to talk about here. Can, before we get into the serious, amazing homeschooling aspect, because I definitely have plenty to say on that too. Just what you said before, Erin, about the campsite, it made me laugh. I stifled a laugh, because Us humans, we all do that regardless of what age we are. We think we're all grown up, and it is so funny. I remember, and I'm sure everyone has this experience. It cannot just be where I went to school, but at university, for classes, people would have their chair, and it was an unspoken rule that you had better not sit in that person's chair. And I feel like it happened, like, it couldn't happen in a class of 1,000 people. It couldn't happen in a class of maybe 200 people. But the moment you got to, say, 50 people and down, or even 100 people and down, you knew exactly where those 100 people were sitting every time. And I remember one time I was taking a course in Buddhist psychology, and the teacher said to us, "You should try sitting somewhere different today." And you wouldn't believe all these 20-year-olds, how much they grumbled and groaned about this and what a big fuss everybody made, and I'm including me, about the fact that we had to sit somewhere different. And I think we all felt very ill at ease during that one lecture because we weren't comfortable. We weren't in our little safe spaces, our seats. And so it's so funny how I think maybe we go about making little miniature homes in so many different places. And even a chair, I've never thought about it in this way before, but even a chair could become your home for an hour a week or what, 3 hours a week, whatever it is. And so just to circle back to what Ashley said, and no, it's absolutely true. It doesn't matter whether something is taken away from you or whether you choose to leave it with your childhood bedroom, you can still feel that same amount of grief and loss, whether it's on a small scale because it's your chair in a class for an hour, or whether it's your entire childhood bedroom where, as Erin said, you've put so many of your, well, okay, I'm not going to say exactly what you said, Erin, but the idea of it, where you've had all the things that you do every day, and you've had your dreams or your hopes. I mean, not to get too cliche here, but where you've had it all for so long, and then to have to give that up, it's absolutely just as heart-wrenching and difficult, but yeah, the idea of the bedroom. So now maybe I can tie this back to what you just said, Erin. So with our homeschool day, I mean, it does not look the same every day, as I'm sure your experiences will mirror. But what I have found regarding a shared space is that often we will actually be more we will try to like take one specific area and kind of make that where we're doing our activities for the day. And don't get me wrong, that doesn't exactly work. But one small aspect of this is that I'm not sure if this is the same for all kids, because I do only have the one, and I can only speak from our experience, but my daughter will often enjoy taking an activity, even if she begins it elsewhere, and taking it to her bedroom. And it's just kind of this natural transition, maybe more so if she's enjoying the activity, to be honest. But she might start, say, a craft or whatever it is. I mean, that is her favorite at the moment, but she might start that in another room, and then the craft will work its way to her bedroom. And it's what made me kind of initially think about this idea of the bedroom as this mini home for a kid. And I feel like I've been talking for way too long here, so please just jump in. We all have so much to say.
That's so good. And I also want to talk about that homeschooling piece, but I want to jump back to what you had talked about, people getting a kind of a set sense of where they want to sit and it's their chair, because, oh my goodness, yes. And I think if we think about that as far as Because I think I had always thought about that as almost like people being very attached to habit, right? Like this is where, or in their comfort zone. And that's true. But it's interesting just to kind of frame it around this idea of home as well. Because I do think that if I think of some of the different locations that I would move through in my week, I do have very, right down to like particular parking spaces that I would park. I sit in pretty much the same spot when I go to church. Church is, that's always a joke about people taking people's spots because people just get very habit driven. I walk in, I sit here. But I feel like this is a, I'm getting into a bit of a tell-all here about my silly habits today, but there's even like a Burger King that I go sit in to sometimes do some work between a couple of different people that I see or work with. And it's very typical for me to kind of time where other people are sitting so that I can get my little booth because I usually try to get some writing done at that booth. And I feel like I can think better at that booth, which is, I don't know, but to me, it's that idea, you know, Ashley, you were describing those different feelings of, I guess, safety or, and I know we've talked before with Haley about when we're feeling safe, we can be more creative. We can be more. And so I think like, let's say that I was going to sit down and do some writing. It's the idea that being somewhere so habitual that I'm not focused on anything, but then getting that kind of that work done or that writing done, if that makes sense. But yeah, you know, when you're saying all that, Bex, I'm thinking, oh, that is so me. and I would even say that about my vehicle is a sense of home for me. And yeah, like in lots of different ways, I just have a real sense of, like this is my space. It's where I belong. I think about lots of things while I'm driving, while I'm parked. One of my guys has a couple of really little girls. So I have one-to-one time with them each week. And so I almost feel like it becomes a mini home during that day because we have certain books in a certain place and certain toys and certain snacks. And there's just a whole kind of vibe. So anyway, sorry, I totally went off on that. And I know I'm going to have some thoughts about the homeschool stuff as well, but Ashley, do you have anything coming up about our home with our kids first?
Yeah. I mean, I'm laughing too, because I have to share. It's so funny. This conversation about, or the piece of the conversation about having spots. First of all, Erin, I have to say, I have started strategically or maybe intentionally picking the same, not necessarily the exact same parking spot, but same area, because I've started coming out and not remembering where I've parked. And that's been my solution of trying to go to the same area so that when you come out, you just go to that area, you'll find the car. But I'm also laughing about this. I made a note here. It says fighting over spots, because that's a thing in our house and it has been for years. And actually, just as I'm saying this, I remember, I think growing up in my own home with, I have two sisters. I think we only fought, or I don't even think it was a fight. I think it was like, we determined our own, like who sat where at the kitchen table. I don't know if that's maybe something that a lot of people can relate to. Maybe that's a normal, that's a thing that happens in a lot of homes around the kitchen table, especially for families. If you do come together, you know, every day at the kitchen table, you know, everybody has their spots. But in my house with my two kids, spots and claiming spots, and you're in my spot, that is in the kitchen, that's around the kitchen counter, that's in the living room, it's now also too when we go out to a restaurant. I mean, I think some people have like certain, well, that's what you shared, Erin, with Burger King, right? Having a certain spot. But my kids are now like, oh no, like my one kid's like, no, I always sit on that side close, you know, on the inside of the booth. And my other kid's like, really? So it's just, it's comical to me, the whole thing. But I think there is a lot to it. I mean, obviously, right? Because we all have these experiences. And I think it does make a lot of sense. And you kind of tapped into that, Erin. So I won't go into it too much more. Do you want me to now talk about the homeschooling piece, or?
Is it okay if I respond to what you just said?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it reminded me absolutely. That's all so familiar. Even with three people, that's exactly what happens. We have our spots. But we recently-ish had house guests, and when we had them, we had to really think very hard about who was going to sit where around the kitchen table so that all the relationships between people would be kept, because there was me, my husband, our daughter, and then there was my daughter's best friend and her mother, who is my friend, and thinking, well, where will everybody be most comfortable in relation to each other, and how you have to make sure that, the friends are sitting next to each other, of course, but then that the kids are sitting next to, well, that the friend's kid was sitting next to her mother, and then, oh, well, will our daughter sit next to me or my husband? So it's not just about the spot at that point. It becomes about the relationships also. But also what you said, Erin, before about being able to think better in a specific spot. I've been thinking about that very idea, and how I'm not sure what it is, but maybe it's the familiarity, like that word that you brought in earlier, Ashley. But maybe it is just the fact that we can be on automatic a little bit, and we don't have to be thinking so much about our surroundings, but we can think about exactly what it is we want to focus on instead of worrying about all these extra things. I wonder, maybe this isn't where you wanted to go with the homeschooling conversation right now, but I do wonder how it affects our kids' learning as homeschoolers, that they are in their safe space, their familiar space, and so they don't necessarily need to have all these other distractions, and maybe that contributes to making learning easier, or maybe not. I'm not really sure. I don't know if you have any ideas on that or where you'd like to go with this.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, we can go wherever we can go, wherever we go. I think that's a really interesting point. So, if I think about, like, if I think about school and the bells and the buzzers and the announcements and all those sorts of things, I think it depends on the kid. But I would think, as far as if a child was really trying to get into the flow of what they were, or just were, I don't think kids try to get into flow. I think they usually just find themselves there. I don't know. I think that's definitely, like, if I think about my experience at school, so I've always sort of described myself as not having loved school. It wasn't horrific, but it's, I mean, when I found out homeschooling was an option, I was like, let's look into that. So I was kind of an immediate convert around the idea of homeschooling, I think. Oh, maybe I'm going off base here, but I'll just say this. I think even sometimes, so I'm just going to take it to school for a minute. Even sometimes when we're in settings, so whether that's school, maybe if you're at a workplace that you're not 100% about as an adult, I think we find ways of coping. I think humans are amazing and we find ways to make ourselves feel at home. So I think this topic of home is interesting. I know I've gone on a tangent and I'll try to bring it back. But I'm just thinking about this for a minute when I think about school. So I do think that all those buzzers and because I'm a very, I like to observe things. I think the fact of having that many people was very distracting to me. I don't really remember getting into sort of a flow state of learning very often through my school day. I think I was pretty vigilant to kind of do the right things and until I could get on the bus kind of thing. But in a weird way, I do have some sort of positive nostalgic memories of those ways that I I guess maybe made myself feel at home, right? So certain corners of the library or certain parts of the playground. Even sometimes, like, I'll see ads for a certain type of pencil crayon, and I'm like, oh, you know, I think there were things that I attached myself to, if that makes sense, in that environment that still really didn't feel like I was able to fully be myself or kind of fully learn. So just to bring it back, maybe to your point, Bex, if I think about my kids, I think there's been so much less distraction about just being able to purely learn and kind of purely be themselves. And I think that's one of the things we were kind of thinking about, this idea of kids feeling home in themselves and how do we kind of help foster that. And then it just kind of makes me think, I think they naturally do feel at home in themselves if we kind of let that take its regular course. And so I think that homeschooling can go a long way because, yeah, they're learning, they're living. It's not getting separated out into a separate environment or a separate context. I feel like I went all over the place there, but hopefully there was something that wove around. I don't know.
It connected for me, Erin. I think it made a lot of sense. And I could relate to what you're saying, like about your experience in school. And when you were describing having the corner in the library, I think you said, and, you know, certain spots in the playground, I'm like, they're coming back to me as you say it. I can think of my own. And I just thought, the familiarity, again, that word kind of comes up for me, is like that coping, you know, it's a coping strategy, maybe without us realizing it, right? Of you can't be familiar with everything, right? So it makes sense to find your certain spaces and return to them. So then the other word that's coming up for me is consistency, right? Like consistently returning to that spot in the library, or maybe using that drinking fountain at school, as opposed to, you know, one that's even closer, because you, when you're in school, you're bounced around a lot too. And then in thinking about a workplace, like as an adult, for, you know, everybody has different jobs, but for someone who maybe is working in more like an office setting, for example, I think we do the same thing, right? Like, I think we have our little area, and that is our area, and we make it our own, and we make it familiar, and we make it comfortable. And then we probably have a few other spots we go to, or even the paths that we travel to get from point A to point B might be the same, to keep it familiar, maybe. I don't know. That's just what's kind of coming up for me. But when I think about school, I was also really distracted, I think mostly by the other people, by the other students and teachers, just the other bodies around me, I think took up a lot of my attention. And I found it hard to pull myself away and shut that out to focus. And it was a constant effort to do that. And then also not even just the people, but like you kind of mentioned, Erin, like the bells, just what was going on in the environment around me, people and otherwise, which then that actually made me think about, for my kids or anyone who's homeschooling and their time in the home. And I mean, we all know we do leave the home too. We spend a lot of time out of our home as homeschoolers as well. So it's not to say our kids don't also have those experiences of being somewhere, maybe the library, where they, you know, they have their favorite spot in the library or whatnot, right? But when they are doing a lot of their living and learning within the home, it just makes me think about other conversations we've had on here, Erin, around how some of us, or a lot of us, end up being really intentional about our home environment. Like, how do I want to put this? Like, there's a couple different things coming to mind right now. The first thing that I was thinking about was, like, we've even talked on here, and this is kind of, it's probably, we were talking about it during the strewing episode, where we talked about playing certain music, maybe lighting different scented candles. I'm just thinking about like how we kind of, I think you said it earlier, Erin, we maybe start thinking about our home in a bit of a different way, because we do spend a lot of time in here, and we're aware of how our environment has an impact on us and our kids. And we think about, how can we make this more enjoyable? What kind of comfort can I bring in? And it just, yeah, makes me think of strewing. I'm trying not to bounce all over the place here, but I'm just making all these connections to our conversation, because I was even thinking about
you know, what you were saying earlier about like the messiness, I don't know how you put it, like the messiness of your home, but it made me think, like, because we live in our homes, like we're not out most, or I'm not, I'll speak for myself, like we're not leaving every day, or if we do leave, maybe it's just for a couple hours. So, you know, right now there's Lego on the table because we're not done building that Lego set. And I mean, that's just the way it is. I'm not worried about it. Maybe we'd pick it up and move it if we had grandma coming over or something. I'm not saying we never do that. I intentionally strew puzzles that are kind of partially done or I've started, and I leave that out. I don't know, strewing kind of kept coming to mind. So I'm going to stop because I've just shared too many ideas there at once, but a lot coming up. And yeah, I think it's really cool.
So yes, no, there is so much once again in what both of you said. So when Erin, you first started speaking about school, I thought at first, oh, wait, why would I have said that there was anything different about homeschooling and being able to learn and being comfortable than being at school? Because kids go to the same school every single day, just like you're in the same home every single day, and they have the same chair, I mean, waiting for them at most schools. So why is that we would have more of a sense of comfort at our physical home rather than our kind of metaphorical school home? And then I thought it's exactly what both of you were saying about distractions and how I think not just the people, but the environment. We can control our environment at home so much more. And maybe it's also that sense of control, like not just for us as parents, but for us when we were being schooled. I mean, not that we're not still learning. And for our kids homeschooling, like my daughter will very much be one of those people who wants to affect her environment. She's not controlling, like that would not be the word that came to mind at all, but she wants to be the one choosing which music, for instance, like you said, Ashley, which music is being played, or, oh, if you're going to light a candle, I mean, that better be a scent that I like, or just kind of building, for her, it is crafts. So building crafts and placing them places in the house because perhaps, and yeah, I do say house because, okay, it does happen to be a house. We did live in an apartment before. So, but just the idea of being able to make those adjustments when you're a kid too. And maybe, I mean, I did homeschool until actually my house burned down and then I went to school. So yes, that's a whole other kettle of fish. The fact that those two things were intertwined, but, I was not able to control my environment. Not when I was a child homeschooling and not when I went to school. It was a very different, you know, style of homeschooling. But I do remember I was only in school, high school for 2.5 years, but I remember thinking, oh, like this is still different, even from the kind of homeschooling that I had, because I could no longer necessarily feel at home in the same way because, well, obviously, if I put something somewhere, I mean, I would either have to put it away much faster at a school or someone would move it. And such a different feeling. And then even when it was a very small high school that I went to, so they changed locations. And that was very jarring, not just to me, but I think to everyone who went to the school, because yeah, it's surprising how much I say that that home is more of a feeling than a place, and then you realize that the feelings you attach to places are so powerful. So yeah, I guess just getting back to even, yeah, in our everyday lives at home, trying to kind of figure out how we're sharing the environment with each other. And if one of us wants to have, say, like you mentioned, Ashley, a puzzle out, well, how is that going to affect others of us? So it's so interesting how our styles are, like everyone's styles of being at home, kind of vary. Like what makes one person comfortable is not going to make someone else comfortable. So like you mentioned messy and tidy, and I remember hearing you both discuss that on one of your previous podcast episodes. And just thinking how I might prefer a very tidy environment, but funny enough, I mean, to me, it's funny. To people who don't feel this way, it's not funny. It's natural. you know, someone else might think, oh no, I'm much more comfortable with things laid around. That's kind of like you're building a home around you of these objects, and that could make them feel more at home and more comfortable. And so how we have to kind of balance that out between people, I think is interesting.
That is super interesting. And just thinking about like, so the school environment, because the rules are preset. So, I mean, from the time kids are pretty little, so you think about like kindergarten, and it's like, you know, they'll sing up the tidy up song and things go in a certain place. And that all makes a lot of sense for a group of people and being, you know, respectful to put things back and make sure it's available for other people. And of course the school day has, you know, there's the next activity they have to move on to. So it's kind of preset. And so I think that it's interesting when there's often a suggestion that if kids don't go to school, they won't learn expectations, or they won't kind of have, I guess, maybe a sense of order or organization or whatever. What I have found, just both with my own kids, but even just with other kids and maybe just people that I know, I feel like people, there's something really inherent there. Some people are just inherently quite organized and some people are not. And I don't actually find school makes that big of a difference. You know, I know lots of disorganized people who went to school. But I think what's interesting about the opportunity to be at home is that because it's not as preset, and it, that doesn't mean that there aren't, you know, maybe it's important to one or both parents that things go a certain way, but there's still a lot more, even the most kind of organized, structured family, it's still not the same as school, where it's like, it's tidy up time, you know, class two is leaving the gym, so now we're going into the gym. Like, it's not like that. And so I think there's that opportunity that our kids have when they're young to kind of think about how, you know, how do you move in your home in a way that feels good to you, but is also feeling good or fair to other people. And I think what it does is it kind of introduces a way of being that is not so black and white. It's not kind of like, well, even things like sharing and taking turns, the way that they're often presented out in places like school, it's very, it's kind to do this, you do this, and then you do that. This person has a turn. And then when the timer goes off, it's the next person's turn. It's, I understand why it's done that way, because it makes it clear. But it's not really messy enough to learn those, you know, that stuff is just a lot more nuanced than that, right? And so I think living and learning together in your home, whether that's your house or apartment, or whether it's in your car on the way somewhere or whatever, just in community with one another, you're always taking other pieces into consideration. And there's always that space to say, you know, I know so-and-so has their puzzle out here and you're wanting that space. They've worked so hard on it. Could we think about you doing this in a different space? maybe that doesn't go smoothly, maybe it does. But the point is, those ideas are always being put out there about how do we share this space. Again, it could be the booth at the restaurant. It's not always the house, but you're working together to share space with people. Even when we're doing things with other homeschool families, whether that's a co-op or something like that, it's still not clear cut the way it is at school. I've been to some pretty organized homeschool events, and there's still a lot of leeway. There's a lot of, like, you arrive and maybe one parent had thought they'd be sitting together as a family, but another one wants all the kids to sit together, but a little sibling wants to sit there. And so there's conversation. Like, I can't think of any homeschool event that I've been to that there hasn't been some figuring out. So I think that's a real bonus to kids, to just be living in this way that it's like, oh, you know, we're going to work together to find a solution. It's not necessarily going to be 100% fair or even all the time. We're kind of working with what we've got, and taking, like, varying things into consideration.
I have thoughts, but they're all over the place.
That's okay.
So Bex, if your thoughts are more organized, I'll let you go.
No, it was just a very short, short tidbit just to do with that. that I think it's so interesting, what you said about, yeah, kind of being able to have that input. And I think when kids are able to make decisions, whether it's about their environment or how their day is run, it just seems to give more of a sense of comfort and feeling at home. I mean, feeling like maybe it's something as simple but large as I belong here, or maybe it's just that ability to control what's going on. But I do love that that homeschooling does give more of that sense of being at home when you get to make those decisions in different environments. So that was just a little tidbit, if you want to.
Yeah, no, that was actually helpful to listen to first, because it's making me think about how, I mean, obviously kids who go to school go back to wherever their home is afterwards, and then they have the opportunity to do this within their family and with their siblings as well. But it's making me realize that this is probably a reason why a lot of people choose to homeschool, because they want more time to have those conversations, to consider those things. And this is kind of what my thoughts are still a little bit all over the place here, but I did make a note. And I think this is, I hope I'm not jumping ahead too much either, because I think we were going to get into this maybe. But I'm kind of thinking another benefit to this is, so the idea that kids can make more decisions and are almost like empowered to make those decisions. Like, they're really, we seem to slow down and we seem to listen and take the time to listen and consider what's working and what's not working for everyone in this space or at this time. And I think by doing that is allowing the kids to, how do I put this into words? Like, I know we all think that that's so valuable. Like, it lets them become more comfortable in taking the time to think for themselves and make the decisions for themselves, rather than, like, I'm going to go back to, like, the idea of school. You just don't have that opportunity as much because it just doesn't work, right? Like, the teacher, there's not the time to have a conversation with all of those kids. It's just not practical. It wouldn't work. And I'm not saying there's not things that can be done to help with it, but I think that when you're at home and, you know, over years, people are taking the time to have a conversation with you, you know, ask you, what are your needs in this moment? What are your hopes in this moment? Then your confidence grows in yourself. Like, for one, you're like, okay, I matter. How I feel in this environment and in this space and with this group of people matters. It matters to them, and it matters to me.
So it's not about learning not to share space and not consider others, but also not being overlooked, I guess, as a kid. And I think that that does a lot. I hope this is making sense. I think it does a lot for their confidence as they grow. And where that's leading me, which I'm stumbling around with my words here, but I think, like, to me, it's like you're listening to your, like, I want my kids to listen to their inner self. And so I'm making that connection with what you guys have talked about is like your home, you can feel at home with yourself. And I think it's through those types of opportunities where we do slow down and we do want to figure out what works for each person in the moment. That's a piece of that, of helping them get to there, to feel comfortable to even just ask for some, or say, this isn't working for me right now. Oh yeah, I'm going to stop. I'm going to make sure some of that made sense.
No, it absolutely made sense. I'll just,
okay.
But no, it also comes back a little bit to what I was writing about in the blog post, I think. But it's such, I even used the word elusive, I know, in the blog post, and even discussing it is elusive because, well, it's like the most complicated and difficult thing to reach as a person. But I guess, okay, I'll start back where you began. And it is funny because we talk so much about how homeschooling is different from, you know, I guess, classical education, and I know that you also come from a background as a teacher, so we know those differences. But I mean, it's so interesting that I'm sure the school system would be so much more similar to homeschooling if teachers in schools just had the resources and the time. I think exactly what you said, Ashley, it all comes down to time, because giving our kids this chance to make their own decisions takes a lot of time. I mean, we'll have days where I know there are so many of these headstrong kids out there, and it's amazing. My daughter is absolutely one of them. Mm-hmm. And where if we're trying to figure out what to do and we're giving her an equal say in what's happening, we could literally have a discussion for hours on what's going to happen, and it will be back and forth. And at the end of, say, 2 hours, we may have even had some tears, and we may have like had to go back and forth and figure this out, and then we still might not have come to a decision. But it's so interesting that even allowing that safe space for frustration or tears, whatever emotions come up, whether they're, you know, positive or negative, allowing our kids to kind of have that sense of I'm making decisions and putting my feelings out there, really does give, like you said, confidence and this comfort that I think is exactly what I'm talking about in the blog post, how their comfort and their sense of home can end up coming from within, because they are able to then affect their environment and kind of make the world their home, because so long as they're comfortable with themselves, they're able to go anywhere and they take that comfort with them. So then a feeling of home or home doesn't have to just be tied to a place anymore. It can go wherever they go. Erin, you're nodding like, yeah.
Yeah, it's making me think about how, so the word that's, the term that's coming to my mind as you're saying this, Bex, excuse me. The term that's coming to mind as you're saying this, Bex, is like being comfortable in one's own company. Because I think that's a problem in our culture. I think we have a lot of people who really are not comfortable sitting with themselves and not having the next thing planned out, or the next, I mean, whether that's people who are kind of chronic, like wanting to almost be chronically busy, whether it's addictions, whether it's people jumping into a relationship really quickly because they don't want to be alone. I mean, I'm really shooting out here, but I think that that's a piece of it, isn't it? With our kids, we want them to feel good and comfortable in their own company. We want them to enjoy themselves and feel good about themselves. And to me, that's what's coming up when I think about, just as you're kind of some of the things you were saying there, and thinking about a child being at home in themselves. That for me is just not needing to look. And I don't mean that people, of course, people that are more extroverted, who they are is they're going to want to gain energy from other people in those interactions. That's great. That's not what I'm talking about. But I'm just talking about that idea that they feel they're enough, and they feel they're not having to look elsewhere for a sense of security. Or and I also just want to say, as much as, you know, I've just talked about school and we've all been talking about school a little bit, it's absolutely possible for kids who are in school to have, well, first of all, kids' experiences of school are very different. So some kids might feel very much at home in school. It might be an environment that really reflects the way that they like to learn and kind of their particular personality. It's always been hard for me to imagine that, but I hear people say this. So I can't, you know, it is, I'm not going to, obviously I have to respect that. But even if it's not, I think that families can set up their family life and their home environment in a way that really honors their child and kind of works with who their child is and fosters this idea that we're talking about around kind of having a safe sense of home physically, but also those pieces that reflect their child and kind of helping their child develop that sense of home within themselves too. So yeah, that's, I think, why I was nodding, is just that was really coming up for me, is I think a lot of people do not feel at home within themselves. And you just kind of see this, and sometimes it can look really highly functional, right? It can be high profile careers. It can be all kinds of things. We don't know what's going on for people, but yeah, that idea of just being able to be good in your own skin is, it sounds so simple, but I feel like it's not. I feel like it's not that common, to be honest. Yeah.
It was, I mean, so Erin, you had sent the question, right? Like, I think if I wrote it down right, I might have kind of shortened it a bit, but the practical ways to nurture the idea of children being at home within their own self. So I feel like that's what we're talking about. But then, so there's that, but then Bex, in your thoughts, you had shared something, because I didn't copy it down word for word either, but like you brought up the secure attachment to parents, I think too. So that's kind of coming up for me here as I'm listening, in, you know, our hopes, and, you know, we're hoping that we are nurturing that comfort and sense of home within our children and how they feel about themselves. And it's making me think back to, I mean, not just back to having a secure attachment to a parent when they're younger, but maybe that secure attachment all the way through, because we know that that's important, of course. So I don't have a question or maybe even really much of a point, but it's just, that's kind of, I think a lot of parents are, you know, for anyone who's listening who maybe hasn't thought about this, I think that would really, you know, strike some people, this idea of like, you know, am I nurturing that idea? And what, and we've talked about different things. But I think, you know, if someone's kind of questioning, like maybe I was before we started having this conversation, like, am I really nurturing this? I can go back to that
My kids have a secure attachment to me, and that's something that I have prioritized. From my experience, I've prioritized that from the beginning, but even for someone who hasn't, you know, if you're prioritizing it now, I think that that remains so important for everyone. And Erin, you talked about that, right? Like how other people are going around in the world, and, you know, wanting our kids to be comfortable in their own skin. I guess I have that question, like, is that possible without a secure attachment to someone? So it doesn't have to be a parent. It could be another family member or a partner, or even a close friend. But again, in so many of our episodes, we come back to that, right? Like the importance of that, that secure attachment, and being connected. And I think that I think maybe you wrote it, Bex, in the thoughts or in the blog post, or maybe I just thought it when I was reading it, but I was thinking about like being at home with your parent. Which makes so much sense when you think about little kids. But I think there's, you know, like Erin, your kids are older, and when they come and hang out with you, even not at home, I'm sure there's a sense of home, right? That comfort, that safety, that familiarity. So yeah, that's all I was going to share.
Mm-hmm. I just messaged one of my kids who's overseas right now, a video, because my sister asked if she could borrow. She's doing play therapy with a little guy. And she asked if she could borrow his, extensive wooden, like Thomas the Train Engine, Thomas the Tank Engine, all the characters and whatever. So he said that was fine. And so I got carried away early this morning, and I was like, setting up tracks. I was just kind of seeing what was there, and I had, you know, anyway, it was fun. And so I just took a little bit of video, for him. And I do feel like there is this, this childhood nostalgia that feels, so it's a few things. It's that, sense of like his childhood and his home with seeing the train, but it is also that attachment with me that we had this common experience together, that I knew how important that train set is to him. And just so many memories around it. So I do think that, again, as Bex was saying, there's this interplay between like the less concrete sense of home we have in ourselves, but so many parts of ourselves are attached to places and things. And it kind of weaves together somehow. But I would just quickly answer your question, or your kind of the rhetorical question you put out, Ashley, around like this sense of home in oneself, and is it connected to a solid attachment to a parent or another significant caregiver? And I would say yes. I think it's so important. I would say it's key. And I think that I think sometimes we want to make everything sound like, oh, it can all be okay. And I mean, yes, but I do think that we have to really be aware of the importance of those early connections, and not just super early, those ongoing connections that can be trusted for kids during not just those really early years, but the phases that, you know, you have changes and it's a little bit wobbly, and having those safe key people in your life, I think is really very much related to this. Yeah.
Yeah. If I could, So the idea of kind of the parent or parents being the first kind of home for the child, because they're the first safe space. I think there it's an interesting one that we might usually talk about the mother. I mean, it's understandable why, but and in our household, we've tried very hard to make it both of us, which is poses its own set of difficulties, because can you have two homes? But I think you can. And so kind of starting with that attachment, and hopefully secure attachment to the parent or parents, and then working out from there. Oh, there's so many things you both said that I want to address. Oh, but one thing in particular. So it is so much easier to feel that sense of home if you're starting from the secure attachment and from having had a home, from the child having had a home since they were basically born. But what I actually think I was trying to get to in You Are Home, because it's a very important point for me personally, is that idea. I forget which one of you said, but is it possible to gain that afterwards? And I think, yes, it is, but it is so much more difficult to gain that sense of home if you didn't start out with it. And the longer you go without it, it is more difficult. But what I was trying to do in You Are Home was kind of give like ideas for how a person reading the book, whether it's a child or an adult, can gain that sense of home themselves without kind of having help from someone else necessarily. So, I mean, I put many different ways into the book for how you might find home. I mean, you might find home in family, like we discussed before, and that is other people, but you might also find home in the pages of a book or in artwork, whether it's your own artwork that you're creating or artwork that someone else made, or like you mentioned much earlier, Erin, you might find home in nature. So by going to that park, like you mentioned, or just any corner of nature, even if it's really just a tree outside your window, kind of finding, maybe it's finding a way to commune with something other than yourself. Because as much as we've talked about finding home within yourself and being comfortable in your own company, which is absolutely the number one key in my opinion, that's, since it is the most difficult, kind of beginning with those other senses of finding home by communing with other things. And just kind of the idea that if you, like, even if a child, I mean, I think children are so intelligent. So I think they can pick up ideas that sometimes adults have trouble with. But kind of even if a child were to kind of read this book themselves, by themselves, kind of the hope that they would pick up something that would be almost a practical way for them to feel a sense of home in themselves, if that makes any sense. Like, I guess I got a little off our topic here, but I was just thinking about how much more difficult it is to find a sense of home when you didn't have a secure attachment, but how it's still possible.
Yeah, and as you're saying that, I kind of want to take a moment to disagree with myself in what I just said. And it's not really that I'm disagreeing with myself. I think I'm just, it's kind of like an and. Here's another way to think about it. And this is what I like about these conversations, because we don't usually come at them with this is the thesis and we're going to prove it. It's more like stuff comes up as we talk. So this is a really good example of that. Because I feel pretty strongly about the idea of kids having that strong attachment, and how, so I can see in some ways how that helps them to move into feeling at home within themselves. If we just think even about like co-regulation over a period of time and kind of how that all plays out. But another way to think about it is, I am thinking, you know, if kids haven't had that strong attachment, or potentially if they've had a period of time that maybe even their key attachment person didn't really get them, you know, or a traumatic experience that they didn't feel, even though they were, you know, brought up with a secure, consistent person, we're all still different people. We you know, we don't always feel understood, even by those people that love us the most. Is there then a tendency to almost find a way to feel more at home within yourself, because you haven't always been able to figure out who you can trust, and you haven't always had those people to co-regulate with? So, and my tendency is to think that sometimes that can take on forms that are at times maybe less than ideal, but I don't know. I think that's kind of judgy too, right? Because, I don't know. I think it's interesting. I think that maybe sometimes in times when we're feeling alone, or if a child has kind of felt chronically emotionally alone, maybe there are some strategies that they come up with. I can think of a situation coming to mind right now of someone who, so he grew up between two or three homes, and how important there were a couple of like objects, I would almost call them like artifacts of his childhood, really, that have been so important to him. And so it's almost like maybe kind of projected that onto these objects. So I'm sure that maybe, you know, somebody could say that that's not particularly healthy or whatever, but I don't know. It is what it is, right? And it's that way of finding home within having to move to different places. Like, I'm having to go to these two or three different places, but this is what I take with me that is consistent. Yeah, I don't know exactly where I'm going with this, Bex, except that it just made me think that it depends on how we look at it, doesn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, I was just going to add quickly, in listening to what you just shared, Erin, like, I made a note saying, I wrote down, like, what we say won't be true for everyone, because like you said, we're all different, we're all unique. So I really like what you shared there. And it made me think that, you know, if the goal, because this isn't what happens for everyone, but if the goal is to, you know, for each person to get to a place where they can feel a sense of being at home with themselves, I mean, it makes sense that you get there in a we don't all get there in the exact same way, down the exact same path, because we're all different, you know, some things work for some people and not for other people. So, yeah, I think a lot of what we talked about today actually kind of captures that. I mean, I hope so, because we all have such different lives. Like, even just thinking about other families who homeschool, it can look so different. So yeah, that's just, when I was listening to you, that's kind of what came to mind.
Also the idea of, objects just as much as places can absolutely have meaning. It could be, if you're not in a very fortunate situation, it could be smaller objects by necessity, often small objects can be kind of artifacts or talismans, I don't know, of meaning, and that could absolutely be the meaning of home. I'm also thinking of, you know how a lot of kids have Loveys, those specific, right, dolls or toys that have all the meaning in the world to them, and that just give them that sense of comfort just by being around them, touching them, maybe even seeing them as kids get older. And so it's interesting how you can find that idea of home in objects on so many different levels, whether it's small or whether it's an entire bedroom. Like for us, we moved, I guess it's not that recent anymore. It still feels recent. We were quite worried about how it would affect our daughter, especially because it was, we moved provinces. And so what we kind of felt would be really important, I mean, we discussed it with our daughter and came to this as, okay, I think this could work for us, is if we tried to recreate her bedroom as closely as possible. Now, it didn't end up being that exactly like that, and it didn't need to end up being like that, but it was kind of like, What can we practically do for her to feel comfortable on this move? And I mean, if families have, like some families won't necessarily have like a dedicated bedroom per child, or even a dedicated bedroom. This happens so often. But if they are lucky enough to have a dedicated bedroom, then it is a pretty simple, nice solution to say, okay, your bedroom is kind of your miniature home. It's your safe space. Let's move that and make that as similar as possible. And then even on a smaller level, it could be just the bed, whether it's, I mean, you can't always take a bed frame with you even. Like, it depends on the family's situation, right? But maybe it is just recreating the bed as far as the bedspread or the few toys that are situated and where they're situated to kind of give that feeling of familiarity, to come back to your word, Ashley. But I really loved what you said, Erin, about how, yeah, it doesn't have to be a whole bedroom if all you have access to is an object or two. Well, then that is going to take on all the meaning that you need. And that's how amazingly adaptable kids are. Like, that impresses me so much.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that kind of brought us, I was actually going to ask if we could just throw out a few like practical ideas about home, you know, and our kids, just like on that concrete level of them having a say in their own space, but maybe even in the common space. I want to leave a little bit of time, Bex, because I just want to ask you a few questions about your book before we finish up. But does that sound like it would be good to just talk about some practical ideas? Does that sound okay? And I was thinking, like, Pam Larikia on her Exploring Unschooling podcast, I'm going to dig it out. She did an episode, I'm sure, on I don't know what it was called, but the idea that it's your child's home too. And so I think often people think of like, there's this idea, you know, the kids are living under the parents' roof and the parents decide the decor and maybe the kids get some say in their bedroom. But this was an interesting episode because it was really exploring the idea of the fact that, like, you know, especially with a home education situation, when you're all living in the same space, or sorry, like living and learning in the same space. But even if your kids were in school, I think just how do you create a space that kids feel like it's, they've had some say in it and they're kind of, you know, influencing it. And one thought that came to my mind was around, it's just a kind of a simple thing, but it was just an example around Christmas lights. And, you know, I had an idea in my head around red and white Christmas lights because our house is white and our door is red and it just made sense to me. And one of my kids really, really wanted these multicolored lights. And I'm like, yeah, but that doesn't really fit with my red and white theme. And he's like, well, there's a whole extra bush. We'll put them here. I'm like, yeah, but that's right in the middle. It's like red, white, multicolored. And it's so funny how it took me, like, it's just interesting to peel that back for ourselves sometimes. And I would have said that I was somebody who, I feel like my house has an awful lot to do with my kids. It's pretty family oriented, right? But there were like these few pieces that I was hanging on to. And sometimes that's okay. Sometimes as parents, so much of our lives is about our kids or even about our partner. And we are sharing pets, maybe we're sharing with maybe a lot of different beings, right? As far as, so sometimes it's nice for us to have something that we can just say, no, you know what, you know, this is kind of what I have in mind for this. So I'm not saying that it would have been wrong for me not to have considered his perspective on it. But I just got thinking about it and I thought he's really interested in this. He really wants this. And none of the other kids really cared about the Christmas lights, but he was quite interested in it. And so I was like, yeah, you know, let's do that. And so we did that for a few years, how we had the red and the white and then the one bush with the color. And then a couple of years ago, we went to put them on and he said, well, it doesn't, he's like, you know, it doesn't really make sense to have these colored lights in the middle, whatever. So anyway, and then I was like, no, but this is what we do now. And so it was almost reversed. But it was just a moment for me where I was just kind of like examining, like, how important is this to me or not? And as I said, there have been things where I've been like, no, you know what, guys, I just need this. I need this to be this way, and that's okay. But that was an example of a time where I kind of went, what is this really about? You know? And it was just, it was fun to kind of have him come in with that other way of looking at things. And then the other thing quickly, also Christmas related, my daughter really wanted to get her own tree. And so this was probably 5 or 6 years ago. And she really got, it was like a whole project. She spent a lot of time choosing the decorations and coordinating. And I was picturing it like in her room, or maybe, I don't know where I was picturing it, somewhere in the basement. I don't know. I wasn't picturing it in the living room somehow. And I kind of felt foolish afterward, but she was like, well, no, it's like, it's going to be another tree in our living room. I'm like, okay. You know, and like, I can't imagine it any other way now. Like, it's been about 5 years. And so we moved our tree from where it was, and just because it fit better in another spot, if we were adding the second tree. And again, I would be disappointed if she didn't want to have it there now, because it's just kind of become integrated into our norm as far as like holiday decorations. But yeah, like my brain originally, I'm like, oh yeah, it'll be in her room. And she's like, no, like, you know, I want it to be seen by the window, you know, through the, like, she wanted it to be available to people. So anyway, yeah, I don't know if either of you have any sort of like practical things like that, where it, you just kind of helps kids have that sense that it's their home as well.
It's funny, your Christmas examples made me think. So, I mean, we celebrate Hanukkah in our household, but it's the exact same idea. So with the decorations, it is so funny because I definitely had my own ideas for how I wanted to set things up and how I wanted things to be. And, oh, this is going to look so beautiful with this. Oh, it will all match. And then my daughter came on the scene and she helped. And in helping, of course, she completely changed everything, all the ideas that I had had. And I just thought, oh, this is, at first I had to think, oh, it's not going to match. And, you know, I was disappointed. And then I thought, how much nicer is this? Because, you know, she's put her mark on things and she's going to enjoy it herself. And she's been a part of it. And I think what that really gets to is the idea of compromise, and how if we want to let our kids contribute to the just the physical layout of the home, we're going to have to compromise, whether that's what is put out or how it's put out, or even what we choose, or exactly what, how things are laid out. So I mean, number one, I mean, we have obviously chosen, as I'm sure every homeschooling family's experience is, we have chosen furniture for the house that reflects, or not just homeschooling families, any family, but we've chosen furniture for the house that reflects what our kids are going to like, not just us. I mean, in our living room, we have a leather couch, and then we have a modular couch. And kind of as a family, we had to come to the agreement of how will we make these two very different pieces of furniture match and go together to form a cohesive whole, which I think is what we're always doing, is how can we take these disparate articles and make a cohesive whole? Or whether it's where something is placed, like I have the artwork that I collected from traveling, to various countries across the world, and I like to have it displayed. It makes me feel at home. It makes me feel good about things. I like it. But my daughter is a prolific artist, and how can we take her art and put it on the walls in a way that makes her feel appreciated, and so we can also appreciate her art. So in our previous home before we moved, it had been before she was old enough to be making a whole bunch of art, and so it was just my art that I'd collected, and then we kind of threw hers on top where we could in a hodgepodge. But then when we moved, we kind of got to think about, well, how will we display her pieces with the others? And so it became this whole thing about deciding where the artwork will go and how they will complement each other on the walls. So that's just two parts, and that's just really about rearranging the space.
Well, and just sorry, Ashley, I'm going to jump in really quickly because it's like that distinction between, I mean, because of course, if kids are living in the house, their stuff is going to be there. There's going to be toys. And I think a lot of people would maybe say, oh my gosh, the whole house is about the kids. What are you talking about? But it's that distinction between, like functionally things being there and then a child really feeling like they are reflected in. I mean, Bex, when you're talking about the difference in the art, right? It's like having their pictures up or something, just something that was really important to them, purchased or moved, maybe an idea they had about rearranging something. That just feels, you can see that in their face. It just feels different when they've really had a say in either something they've made is being reflected up, or they've had a real say in the way that something happens or is rearranged, or
Yeah, and actually that's I think I shared recently on the podcast, but I can't remember for sure. I hope I'm not. I'll keep it brief just in case it's a bit of a repeat. My youngest, not long ago, oh, I think we talked about it in the creativity episode, maybe. Anyway, he got really interested in reorganizing or restyling rooms. So very much with what you were talking about, Bex. And in his bedroom, that was pretty easy for me to just, this is your room. I want you to have it set up the way that you want it set up. But when it was like in the living room was one area, the basement was another area. There was another spot too, but more of a shared space. There was a lot more conversation. But at the end of it, I just was like, we can always move it back, right? It was so important to him. He spent so much time talking and thinking about it. And he just thought it was really neat to what he wanted to do was set himself a challenge where every day he would change something in the house. Thankfully, he was open to small changes as well. But there were some pretty big ideas. I say big, but it wasn't even, we weren't painting or anything. Like everything, it was more so about like moving furniture and stuff. And he got over it. Like he's not doing it anymore either, right? And I want to say most of the spaces have been moved back, and not by us without him, but I know the living room, the one spot we have like a really big ottoman, and he was really happy with where he moved it. But I think, I don't remember the reason, but he eventually did say, you know what, I think it's time to move it back. But I think just, yeah, giving him that opportunity to be like, okay, yeah, this is something you really want to do and it's important to you. So, and I just thought like, why not? So that was the one example I thought of. And then the other one that kind of came to mind that I think a lot of is true for everyone family, because everyone, we're all putting meals together. So that kind of popped in my mind when, and I think this is something parents are great at, not necessarily me, but I hear a lot of other people use this as an example. Whereas the kids get, well, some really young kids, but especially as they get older, get involved in, you know, the prepping and the cooking and getting ready for family meals, but also choices. And some kids eventually taking on, like, I'll make dinner Wednesday nights or whatever it is, right? But that different because it's not, we're not talking about physical space anymore, but just having that, you know, like say like their voice matters when it comes to what meals we're going to put together, even though it's a shared meal, and having them really involved in that. I think that that's, that was another example I kind of thought of. And then the other one was, and I don't think I'm getting too off track with these with my thoughts, but the other idea that came to mind was even just letting kids pick their clothes, whether it's they go shopping and pick out their clothes and their shoes and stuff, or maybe like, cause, well, I definitely have one kiddo who really doesn't like shopping. But even just as they get older, like letting them open their drawers and their closet and pick out outfits. And for some parents, I think, well, like, you know, they think like, well, I've always done that. You know, they just wear whatever they want to wear. I don't want to be picking their outfits. And then I definitely know some other parents who had a hard time letting go of that because they really had a lot of fun and enjoyed picking out the little outfits for their kids. And that was, you know, tough when the kids were like, well, I don't want to wear that. Or, you know, I want to pick my own outfits. My two have both been pretty easygoing with that. So I've actually been like, you go pick your outfit. but yeah, kind of just, it kind of comes up where I think with some of these things, it is a matter of the parents getting to a place where they're comfortable to let go, you know, whether that's letting go of control or letting go of ideas or, you know, like our own ideas, letting go of that. But I like what you said, Erin, about how it's also okay to not let go sometimes. And to hold, I think that's good modeling as well. I think that that's great. And Bex, I really liked how you brought in the word compromise. And I mean, you could also use the word collaboration too. Like you're collaborating together when you're making choices in your home that impacts the whole family or like multiple family members. But that's all I could think of for practical ideas.
Bex, I want to give you a little bit of time just I have a couple questions about your book and anything that you would like to say. But the last thing that I think that, I think we've kind of naturally, organically covered a lot of the things that we'd hoped to maybe talk about. The only outstanding one that I do just want to put in there is the idea of community as home. And we might've like alluded to it, but I mean, that could be a topic in and of itself, but I think I just want to say that this sense of being something that's like being part of something that's bigger than yourself. And yet you yourself being an integral part of that. So it's bigger than you, but it needs you. Is maybe the best way to say it. And I think that, I mean, there's a sense of that within like extended family as well, where you kind of, you know, you're coming home or you are feeling home within your community or your extended family, where you feel like you belong, you know, you feel like you belong. And again, having that kind of consistent, well, you kind of mentioned a little bit about it, Ashley, even with your nature or forest school, sorry, at the beginning, that I think when kids are coming to consistent activities or seeing consistent people, they start to feel that sense. So that could be like those specific places and activities, or it could just be the sense that when, you know, when you are at the fall parade in your community or when you're at the grocery store, that it just feels, it's a part of what it's a part of that home feeling. It's that slightly kind of extensive beyond the four walls. And again, I think like Bex, as we've said, that's part place, part people, part self. It's that real combination of things. So I just wanted, as I said, I think there's so much we could talk about with that, but I just wanted to at least put that in there, that I think community is really related to people feeling home. And for people, There are many people right now who do not have homes. So community actually becomes home. And Bex, that might even feel a little bit familiar to you during that period of time after you lost your home, that the community at times actually is people's home. So it's so, like, it's so important.
Go
ahead. I didn't want to cut you off. Did you have anything around that?
Not a huge thing. Just, no, that's funny, because that is kind of the final segment of the book. You Are Home is exactly community, and you use the word belonging, and that is such a wonderful word that I love so much that I used in the book as one of the kind of focal points at the end of the book, because the idea of belonging in general, I think, is the most it isn't the most important, but it's one of the most important ways of feeling at home, is feeling like you belong somewhere, whether that's in a physical place, whether that's in your community, whether that's in your family, or just belonging in the world as a whole. And that comes back to your idea of being at home within yourself. So I guess I would just add, because we can't possibly cover everything, but I would add the idea of neighbors to community also, because I did hear in a previous podcast episode you mentioning that, and it really is so true. I feel like that has been the most amazing part of a home, and what we of a home in community, and what we've missed the most after moving was we were in an apartment before, and somehow so many people living around us in apartments just became our friends by proxy. And in general, I would say that is not how it works for our lives. We aren't perhaps the norm, and that we don't necessarily in our family make friends just because they're close to us or easy to access. And yet with neighbors, that's kind of been a thing that's happened. So I know that I wanted to also kind of just mention online community, because I feel like it's maybe the one really important thing that didn't make its way into the book You Are Home, because you just can't fit that much into a 32 page or 36 page picture book. But we have found that community through online avenues has just been the most amazing thing, and it gives you this feeling of being at home and belonging. And maybe especially just because you can kind of reach out and grab onto it or find it or make those connections yourself, and it's so much of a choice. But I know you guys have two whole podcast episodes on online community, so you don't need me to add that much.
thank you for bringing that up, because we do have two recent podcast episodes, so it just reminds me to link those. And yeah, Ashley, we've talked so much about the value that we've both found in online community. So no, thank you, Bex, for that. Was another thing that, and I'd kind of forgotten that we had talked about that. And so, yeah, I just want to give you, I guess I have a couple of main questions, which is just, you know, where's the best place for people to purchase your book, the You Are Home. But I also wanted to ask a little bit about the illustrator. Because this book is beautiful, both in the writing and the illustrating.
Yeah, no, this has been amazing. Well, I mean, okay, first of all, I mean, you can find the book at, I think it's Indigo, but I believe there are a lot of independent booksellers that are also carrying it. I hate to mention it, but I mean, yes, Amazon does carry the book. So it's nice that there are many places we can find it. I would love more people to know about these ideas of being at home and belonging. But yes, making the book. So you were mentioning how you don't necessarily get to pick your illustrator, and that's mostly true. I mean, you do submit your manuscript with just the words, and then once the editor has picked it up and edited it to their heart's content, they'll choose an illustrator that they think would be a good fit. I really can't speak to anyone else's experience, but I was given a very short list of illustrators and said, oh, I really like this one. Can we perhaps go with this one? And my editor did not have to take that suggestion one bit, but I guess we agreed. And so that is the illustrator who we got. So Andres Landazabal is absolutely amazing. He's become a friend in his own right. And just working with him and working actually with the whole team on this book, I am really, really lucky because I feel like it's been such a great experience and very welcoming. Like, if I could include the experience of making a book as a whole other kind of community and a way to feel at home, I would, because it was a very comfortable, comforting and home-like experience, funny enough, to mirror the book. So yes, Andreas is just an amazing, amazing illustrator. I can never say enough good about his art, because it just, I think what I love the most, if I had to say anything, is how he's able to capture emotions. And so, yes, they're beautiful to look at. And even if they didn't make you feel anything, it would just be, oh, these are gorgeous. But then the fact that you look at the art and it makes you feel so much, and it also adds a whole other dimension to the story that there would not be without those pictures. I mean, I think that's the magic of picture books in general. I adore picture books and how the words and the art need to be together. And one isn't really a whole story without the other. And so that really, really felt that way with this book. And in fact, I had a friend read it, like a very early advanced copy of it. And she said, oh, you know, seeing your words separately, they feel completely different when you then see the words with the illustrations. And so it's amazing how art can absolutely imbue whole new layers of meaning to words and create a whole other story when the two are combined. Yeah.
Oh, and I feel like, I will end with this because I feel like I have lots to say, but I think this is a picture book that could be, it's wonderful for children. And I think it also speaks to adults as well. I think it's just, as so many picture books actually do, but some more than others, because I think that the message kind of that weaves through it could be really, really interesting, but just beautiful for adults as well. So, Bex, thank you so much for sharing your book and sharing your time. And I'm just excited for other people to get to see the book. And I'm hoping that this conversation about home is, I think it's a bit of a different idea that we've had today. But I hope it's helpful to some people, because I found it really interesting just to kind of sift through. So thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks so much, Max.
And
thank you both of you.
I'm glad we figured out a time. This was so good. I'll just end with, speaking of home and community, just mentioning the Virtual Kitchen Table community. And we have kind of a core group of people and are beginning to build and would love to hear from anybody who's interested in joining us there as well. So, okay. Thanks so much.
Bye.
Bye.
And this ends our conversation today. We hope you found it interesting and maybe helpful. If you'd like to connect further or see additional content, Haley can be found on the web and on Instagram at Taking a Kinder Path. Erin can be found at Everlearning. And I, Ashley, can be found on Instagram at AshleyAsMama and at Storytime Shelves. We'd be very grateful if you'd share this conversation with anyone you think might appreciate it. Thank you for your time today.